चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashtaprayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyuttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in the best of songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 14th day of September 2006, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 16, King Chitraketu Meets the Lord. Text 55. Do I need to do word by word or just go line by line? Word by word? Yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukham cha nirgunam brahma tam atmanam avehi mam yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukum cha nirgunam brahma tam atmanam aveiham yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma tamatmanam avehi mam yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma tamatmanam avehi mam. Veda prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma tamatmanam avehi mam. Yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma tamatmanam avehi mam. Yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma tamatmanam avehi mam. Ladies, yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma tamatmanam. Ladies, yena prasupta purusha swapam vedatmanas tada sukam cha nirgunam brahma manam avehi mam. Yena prasupta purusha Svapam vedatmanastada. Sukam chanyuganam brahma. Tamatmanam avehimam. Yena. By whom? The Supreme Brahman. Prasuptaha. Sleeping. Purushaha. A man. Svapam. The subject of a dream. Veda. Knows. Atmanaha. Of himself. Tada. At that time. Sukham. Happiness. Cha. Also. Niyugunam. Without contact with the material environment. Brahma. The Supreme Spirit. Tam. Him. Atmanam. The pervader. Avehi. Just know. Mam. Me. Translation. Know me to be the Supreme Brahman, the all-pervading Supersoul, through whom the sleeping living entity can understand his dreaming condition and his happiness beyond the activities of the material senses. That is to say, I am the cause of the activities of the sleeping living being. Purport. When the living entity becomes free from false ego, he understands his superior position as a spirit soul, part and parcel of the pleasure potency of the Lord. Thus, due to Brahman, even while sleeping, the living entity can enjoy. The Lord says, that Brahman, that Paramatma, that Bhagavan are I myself. This is noted by Srila Jiva Goswami in his Krama Sandarbha. Om Ajnanatamarandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiratam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So before we continue, I'd like to read an excerpt from a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote. It deals precisely with this subject matter of the dream of the material life and material world, and waking up from the dream. This is what this we've been reading about the last few days, these instructions by the Lord to Chitraketu. So this is this famous crow and tal fruit essay. I call it an essay, and I'd like to give a little background of this letter. I'm going to read an excerpt here. And that is that in the early 70s, I got this directly from Madhu Dvish, former Swami, who was then the GBC for Australia. And he was traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and he heard news that one of the leaders in Australia was saying that we fell from the Brahmajyoti, that we never were in the spiritual world. And he was using certain passages of Prabhupada's book to support it. Specifically, I think in Isha Upanishad, if you look carefully, there's something there that seems to indicate that. Quote from Jiva Goswami. And Madhu Dvish had just been with Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying something different than that, and he'd read other things. And so Madhu Dvish wanted to resolve this issue. He had gone back to Australia, I think it was Melbourne, and he couldn't convince this devotee, and it was back and forth, and so there was some confusion. So he wrote to Srila Prabhupada, and he asked him, can you please write something that we can then send out to all the centers to resolve this issue, which had been bubbling up and was causing some confusion in other parts too. And so Srila Prabhupada then dictated this essay. It wasn't precisely a letter as we normally get it. And his secretary, I think it was Shyama Sundar at the time, wrote it down, did some very light correcting, and then sent it to Madhu Dvish. It then went to some other centers. I think Rabindasuru got some. This was in 1972, 73 maybe. So I'm going to read a little bit of this. Now, it's called Crow and Tal. You know, why is it called Crow and Tal? So the Crow and Tal part comes in at the end. And that is that this issue of where we came from, You know, did we fall from the Brahma Jyoti? Did we come from the spiritual world? Were we always here? Or whatever. Ultimately, we shouldn't absorb ourselves too much in it, because the solution to the problem is the same in any regard, is become Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead or go to Godhead, whichever you want to think. We still have to do the same thing. So the Krowantha is this, that two gentlemen were sitting under a tree, and it was a fruit tree, a nice mango tree, say, and a crow came and sat on the branch with the mango. Then the mango fell, and the crow flew off. So then they started a little argument. What happened? So the crow came on the branch. One fellow said the crow came on the branch and moved the branch with his landing and caused the fruit to fall. And the other fellow says, no, you're completely wrong. I saw it directly. What happened was that the crow landed on the branch. It was quiet. The fruit happened to fall, move the branch, and scare the bird to go fly off. And they kept arguing like this for an hour, you know, hours and hours. No, this is what happened. No, this is what happened. So the idea is that this is foolishness, to absorb yourself in an argument about a subject matter that ultimately doesn't really have much significance. So this is why it's called Crow and Tal. But still, Srila Prabhupada wrote this essay so that devotees would have this conclusion according to Srila Prabhupada about this Siddhanta. So now I'll read this. It's three or four paragraphs of the beginning of the letter. And it deals directly with this dreaming state. So Prabhupada says, this is all very wonderful instruction here, we never had any occasion when we were separated from Krishna. Just like one man is dreaming and he forgets himself. In dream, he creates himself in different forms. Now I am the king, discussing like that. This creation of himself is as seer and subject matter or scene, two things. But as soon as the dream is over, the scene disappears, but the seer remains. Now he is in his original position. Our separation from Krishna is like that. We dream this body and so many relationships with other things. First, the attachment comes to enjoy sense gratification. Even with Krishna, desire for sense gratification is there. There is a dormant attitude for forgetting Krishna and creating an atmosphere for enjoying independently. Just like at the edge of the beach, sometimes the water covers, sometimes there is dry sand coming and going. Tatastha Shakti. That's us on the border. Our position is like that, sometimes covered, sometimes free, just like at the edge of the tide. As soon as we forget, immediately the illusion is there. Just like as soon as we sleep, the dream is there. We cannot say, therefore, that we are not with Krishna. As soon as we try to become Lord, immediately we are covered by Maya. Formerly, we were with Krishna in his lila or sport. But this covering of Maya may be of very, 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 very long duration. Therefore, many creations are coming and going. Due to this long period of time, it is sometimes said that we are ever conditioned. But this long duration of time becomes very insignificant when one actually comes to Krishna consciousness. Just like in a dream, we are thinking very long time, but as soon as we awaken, we look at our watch and we see it has been a moment only. Just like with Krishna's friends, they were kept asleep for 1 year by Brahma. But when they woke up and Krishna returned before them, they considered that only a moment had passed. So this dreaming condition is called non-liberated life. And this is just like a dream. Although in this material calculation it is a long, long period, as soon as we come to Krishna consciousness, then this period is considered as a second. For example, Jai and Vijay. They had their lila with Krishna, but they had to come down for their little mistake. They were given mukti, emerging into the Brahma Sayujya, after being killed three times as demons. This Brahma Sayujya mukti is non-permanent. Every living entity wants pleasure, but Brahma Sayujya is minus pleasure. There is eternal existence only. So when they do not feel transcendental bliss, they fall down to make a compromise with material bliss, just like Vivekananda founded so many schools and hospitals. So even Lord Brahma, he is still material and wants to lord it over. He may come down to become a germ, but then he may rise up to Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to Godhead. This is the position. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, this is very illuminating. What is this dream? Now, one thing about a dream is that when you have a dream, you may create things that don't really exist. Prabhupada gives the example often of a golden mountain. Right? You see gold, you see a mountain, and in your dream you have a golden mountain. You're climbing it or you're looking at it. So the mountain exists, the gold exists, and you concoct the golden mountain in your dream. And then you wake up and you say, oh, there's no gold, there's no mountain. Now I go about my regular life. But still, everything in your dream has its basis in your waking life, so-called real life, isn't it? Some basis. In the fourth canto, this comes up again, actually, at the end of Narada Muni's teachings to King Pachinabhaishat. It's very interesting about this dreaming. And he says there, sometimes you dream something you haven't seen before in this life, but you may have seen in a previous life, and it's very startling. But somewhere, it has its basis in our experience. Now, think of the material dream as a whole. Where do we get this idea of man-woman relationship, of this body, with its two hands, its two eyes, and so forth, the relationship of parent to child, and vice versa? It must have its basis in reality. And so this is how we can understand the reality of the spiritual world, the Loka Vrindavan. Everything is there in its archetypal form, in its perfect form. The relationship between Krishna and the gopis is there with no inebriety. Prabhupada created a new meaning for this word. The word inebriety literally means drunkenness. But in Prabhupada's lexicography, it means more or less negativity. There's no downside, right? In this world, we may have some so-called rasa dance, the rave, or whatever they call it. But there's a huge downside. I don't have to go into details. You know, the intoxication, the body is so much pain for a few moments of illusion that you can enjoy like Krishna. But the original is there. And everything there is original. Just like this land that we see around us. Why is it that we like to live in the country? Why is it that we like to have flowers? Flowing water, right? This beautiful fountain was, I think, donated by Ambarish, if I'm not mistaken. Why do we want that? Because there's a little taste of like the nice waterfalls coming in Vrindavan. You read about how this ice cooling the whole atmosphere. There's the beautiful flowers are a little reflection of the wonderful variety of vegetation in Vrindavan, in Braj, when Krishna goes out to play. We read about these things in the Bhagavatam. So this is where the model is. But the problem comes when we forget we're dreaming, when we take the dream to be reality, and we lose touch completely with the actual reality. So understanding this, that we are in a dreaming state, which when we don't want to be, we want to be in the real state where we can enjoy these things eternally, where there's no ending, there's no downside, there's no nightmares, you know, it's just the original reality. We need to hear. We need to hear from the awake person. You remember in the Bhagavad Gita, in that verse, Daivyesha Gunamahi, Mamaya Dorottaya, Mamevyepa Bhagdyante, Mayametang Tarantite, that this material energy of mine is truly divine. Why is it divine? Because it's connected to the divinity. It's part of Krishna's energy. When we, out of illusion, separate it from Krishna, it becomes material for us. But for Krishna, everything is divine. So he calls it Daivyesha Gunamahi, made of the three modes of nature, is impossible to overcome by our own efforts. But one who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond it. Very important verse. In that purport, Prabhupada talks about how guna can also mean rope. So the modes of nature are like ropes tying us. They're not visible, but they bind our consciousness, our mind, to this world. We try to enjoy the varieties and the production of the modes of nature, the objects of the senses, the relationships with them. It's all part of the prakriti and the gunas working. So we're tightly bound. We're thinking we're making progress. We're getting, you know, we're getting some material progress in this world, but ultimately we remain completely bound up. So in order to get free of these ropes, we must be get the mercy and the help of one who is already unbound. And that is the guru, the sadhus. And of course, Krishna himself, who is totally beyond the modes of nature, helps us through his words. Through his words as given directly in Bhagavad Gita, or here, he's Krishna speaking in his form of Sankarshan, the same personality. But they always come through a medium. And as we see, the medium now is Srila Prabhupada. So this is why he says the transparent via medium. He used that word in a special way also, but means this transparent medium where there's no distortion, there's no static from some personal desire or personal motivation, but simply giving it as it is. But we need that. Just think of the language. What did we know of Bhagavatam or Gita or anything before Prabhupada took the trouble to translate it into the English language and set up a mechanism and with his orders and his followers where it could be translated into all the other languages of the world. Until that effort had been made in the English medium, as it said, we had no chance, really, of understanding this. So Prabhupada, great effort, he created a whole language, you know, sense gratification. If you say that to somebody, it doesn't really, you know, for us, it's obvious what it means. But, you know, that's just what we do. I mean, what's the big deal? Sense gratification, you know. But that whole idea, you know, the transcendence, Brahman, all of these words because of the medium, the English medium given by Prabhupada, we can begin to understand. So waking up from the dream means getting the understanding of the method. We were talking the other day about the method for this. That once you know you're in the dream, and you have, at least you know theoretically, there's God, there's this whole other world, there's Krishna, he's all attractive, I'm simply his energy, I'm part of his pleasure potency. That's very nicely mentioned here. So the pleasure potency is Ladini Shakti, personified as Srimati Radharani. So our nature is, our inevitable nature, intrinsic nature, is to be enjoyers. Even you see the little insects, the birds, any animal, they're trying to enjoy. They're trying to avoid destruction. They have two basic modes, right? Fear and food, you know, and sex, you know, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But it's all based on trying to somehow eke out some enjoyment in this world. What to speak of the developed human form? We have much more, quote, refined means of even material enjoyment. Music and all of these different things. But the basic principle is that we want to enjoy. We're part of Ladini Shakti of Krishna. But when that Ladini Shakti, which is meant for Krishna's enjoyment, that Ladini Shakti, personified as Radharani, is the personification of love for Krishna. Radha, Krishna, Praniya Vikriti, Ladini Shakti Rasman. It's explained right at the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what does that mean? It means that the greatest pleasure is experienced when we forget completely about our own pleasure and simply dedicate ourselves wholly and solely to the pleasure of the Lord out of deep love and affection. That's the highest pleasure that can be experienced by the living entity. When we forget the real enjoyer of that, the ashraya, the vishaya, the real supreme enjoyment of our love, and we try to become self-centered or egocentric, then we try to emanate that Ladini Shakti and have others and other things produce our own enjoyment. And that same Ladini Shakti then produces our suffering because it's in an unnatural position. So the whole idea is to reform our consciousness so that we begin to find pleasure in giving Krishna pleasure. And ultimately, when our only pleasure is in giving Krishna's pleasure, that's pure devotion. That's the pure state. Now, think of it like this, that it's obvious to anyone with a little contemplation that our ability to enjoy in this world materially is limited because the senses are limited. We all have experience. You contemplate something you want to enjoy, whether it's a nice meal or whether it's an association with a person or whatever it may be. And you contemplate it, it goes on in your mind, you're anticipating, then you actually experience it, and then you can remember how you used to enjoy, and then eventually it's over. Right? And as Krishna says very distinctly, yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukkha yona evate, that these kinds of enjoyments are your real source of suffering. So ultimately, is just total frustration. And yet, without another platform of enjoyment, it's all that the living entity has, is this sense gratification, or its more refined forms, adoration, profit distinction, you know, massaging the ego. That can be the greatest enjoyment. But all of it is temporary, all of it is frustrating, all of it is limited. Now, but we have a capacity to enjoy, you know, far, far beyond that. The example is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, how, you know, material sense gratification, the pleasures of the senses, are compared to just a drop, you know, in the ocean of what you can experience from Brahmananda. In other words, having no involvement with the material world, being totally transcendental, and understanding that I am Brahman. You say, I'm spirit. But that Brahmananda itself is like a drop in the ocean of Premananda, of the pleasure of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's exactly the title of the book, The Ocean of the Nectar of the Ocean. So just see, we're selling out our birthright, you know, our existence right, if you will, as living entities for, you know, little pieces of broken glass, when we really are due a great palace of unlimited existing, ever increasing enjoyment in relation to Krishna loving service. So beginning to cultivate that understanding of our real ability to enjoy is important in Krishna consciousness. Now logically, we can use our logic for this. Krishna's ability to enjoy is unlimited. Right? He's Atmarama, he's ever increasing. It's an ocean of bliss in the spiritual world. And how is that bliss being enjoyed? In relation to his devotees. He's not just there alone being blissful. Right? It's all lila, interaction between the cowherd boys and Krishna, his mother, other elders, the gopis, of course. What to speak of the plants, the animals, insects. Everyone is engaged in this wonderful exchange with Krishna, and it goes on eternally. This cycle of, you know, eight different times of the day. There's no end to it. Now, here we are, you know, beating our head against the material energy, trying to enjoy, being frustrated birth after birth. But we belong there. Prabhupada just said, that's our home. We've left there. We're dreaming. We're still there, but we're dreaming we're here. And we've been dreaming for millions and millions of births. Now, because we're trying to enjoy unlimitedly through a limited medium, namely this body and mind. So if we can dovetail our enjoying propensity to Krishna's enjoyment, in other words, if our enjoyment, our pleasure, is simply in giving Krishna pleasure, then we also can start to enjoy unlimitedly, because Krishna's capacity to enjoy is unlimited. It's not bound by the body. The body goes, you know, we enter back into, you know, our role in this spiritual world, which we just fell asleep from. Falling from the spiritual world is really falling asleep. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. We're dreaming that we've fallen. And because it's been going on so long, it's very real for us. But it's not ultimately real. So, you see the logic? If we can simply dovetail our pleasure desires for pleasure with Krishna's pleasure, and it's not alien to us, the purest expression is a mother and child. The mother may have so many problems. Maybe she has a bad leg, all right, giving it so much pain. But if her child is happy, she sees her child is satisfied, that's a much more important and deep enjoyment than to the fact that her leg is giving her, her knee is giving her pain. You see? So that pleasure in others' pleasure, this is really the essence of love. If you love someone, don't you want to make them happy, give them what they want? If they come to your house, you cook for them what they want to eat, and you see them enjoying, that's your enjoyment. You may eat or not eat. You know, you may have a little, you know, remnants or whatever, but that's your enjoyment. So that's the real essence of devotional service. It's very simple. But it begins with accepting the reality of this invisible world that Prabhupada hints at here, and we have so many other descriptions. That, in other words, it begins with faith. Adhav Shraddha. Right? And then Tatak Saru Sangha. By associating with those who have faith and who are actually on the path, then we can begin the process of bhakti, namely hearing and chanting and doing all the other processes, that begins to raise this curtain that, or this dreamlike state, if you will. We begin to wake up and we start to have inklings of that enjoyment. All of us have had experience of some wonderful kirtan where you kind of forget yourself in the holy name and the dancing and the deities and the chanting, or maybe it's in Ratha Yatra or whatever. And you're not thinking of yourself. You're just chanting the holy name. You're thinking of the holy name, Lord Jagannath, you know, whatever. And there's a certain upsurge of bliss there. Like, it was very interesting. We had this Orlando Ratha Yatra. And those of you who were there, it was pretty memorable for various reasons. So, you know, I didn't get to chant on the procession. You know, I got to chant for an hour before the procession. They have this thing where they... Anyway, but that was all right. Jagannath was there chanting Hare Krishna. So then the procession starts. And, you know, we all start chanting and going. And then after maybe, what is it, half an hour, you know, 45 minutes, the skies open up and the deluge comes. And everybody gets totally soaked. You know, everyone's trying to, well, maybe I can get an umbrella. You know, I can get off to the side. But it was so heavy and so long that after it was no possibility. You just had to surrender to it. I'm going to be soaked. You know? And then everyone got more ecstatic. Okay, we're soaked. You know, it wasn't that much wind. You weren't really cold. So you're just dancing and chanting. Now, materially, you know, it was kind of, nobody would do that. You know, I mean, it's just not, you know, it was an austerity. But everyone was blissful because, you know, you just say, well, this is, you know, Lord Jagannath, let's just keep chanting, you know. That's the way I felt. And you could realize, okay, well, this is at least an instance of, you know, a glimpse, if you will, of what it's like to sacrifice, you know, your own material condition just for the pleasure of the Lord, you know, for Ratha Yatra. Festivals are great like that. Because, you know, there's always, well, Prabhu, you know, we got to stay up late, we got to build the car, we got to decorate, we got to do this, cooking, whatever. And you kind of get out of your routine, and you go beyond yourself. And it's always a blissful time to work together like that. That's what Sankirtan is all about. So, you know, these are inklings. This is how it is all the time for a pure devotee. There's always the primacy of the pleasure of Krishna. And what happens is that there's an understanding, a remembrance, constant remembrance of that spiritual kingdom. And within the heart, there's always the service going on. And externally, you know, this the intimate service in the specific deha, siddha deha. And externally, you serve with, as long as the body lasts, you serve with your external senses for the same purpose. There's no distinction, really, in the mood and the motivation for the service. So this is what we saw with Srila Prabhupada. We could see there was an internal reality there that was untouchable, no matter where he was. He's sitting on Second Avenue, breathing, you know, those fumes and the noise, you know, starting the movement, planting the seeds. Or he's sitting in Radha Damodar, you know, a few feet from Rupa Goswami, you know, is chanting his 64 rounds and writing all the books and whatever, you know. It was the same, fixed. Tata pragya patishtita. Remember the second chapter? When the buddhi, the consciousness, is fixed, here's the symptoms. You know, prajahati yadakam, and there's no hint of sense gratification. You're totally yukta. Nasti buddhi yuktasya, nacha yuktasya bhavana, nacha bhaveta kshanti, ashantasya kutak sukham. You know, these verses are very important. Without being linked, in other words, without being Krishna conscious, there cannot be any fixed buddhi. Nasti buddhi ayuktasya. In other words, without Krishna consciousness, the intelligence is always going to be bewildered by the phantasmagoria of the material world. In other words, we're dreaming. But with Krishna consciousness, there can be this fixed intelligence and remembrance. And without yoga, without being linked with Krishna, there cannot be this bhavana, you know, this consciousness, this blissful consciousness of the transcendence of the spirit. And without that bhava, how can there be any shanti or peace? There can only be peace when the mind has reached its goal, when there's nothing else to go for, you know. The mind becomes peaceful when it is absorbed in Krishna. And without peace, how can there be any happiness? So really to find that happiness which we've lost from, you know, leaving the spiritual world in the sense of forgetting it and dreaming for all these births, we have to become Krishna conscious again. And then go back to home, back to God. It is a wonderful phrase. You know, what is a home? You know, I mean, we've made many of us here. Of course, my home is in San Diego, but you've made a home here. But we all know philosophically that this is not really our home. That ultimately we're all renters, right? We're renters in this body. We're renters in our home. In other words, it's temporary. And it's counterproductive to become attached to the abodes in this temporary world, whether it's the body or the house that we have or anything. The only home that we have, the home is the place where you're never kicked out, right? A home where you can feel comfortable forever. Where is that place in this world? There is no place like that. We try to create a place like that, but it's really frustrating. So that home is the spiritual world. Once going there, you never have to come back. You can simply stay there eternally. No getting old, no disease, no frustration, no dissatisfaction. Simply the eternal pastimes of loving Krishna in unlimited varieties of ways and being reciprocating. Krishna is also loving us. This comes out so wonderfully in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You know, those of you who haven't read the book, there's one unique factor of that book that I noticed so well. It's more than any other book, it describes Krishna's love for his devotees. Isn't it? How he's reciprocating. When Gopa Kumar ultimately goes back to Godhead and he sees Krishna, Krishna comes running to him to welcome him back. That famous painting of embracing, you know, after all these. Where have you been for so long? For me, that's a perfect confirmation of this. That Prabhupada. We were there, he gets his old name back, he gets his old relationship back, he gets his old dress back. You know, and Krishna faints out of ecstasy of seeing his friend. That's such a wonderful thing to feel that Krishna loves us so intensely and we're not reciprocating. You know, now let's learn again to reciprocate and by that love, that takes us back to Godhead, that loving devotion. That's the means of going back to Godhead. And truly, you know, because it's a dream, just like on a bed, you're lying on the bed, you're dreaming, you're in a different place, a different age, whatever it may be. Where are you really? You know, well, your body's on the bed, but you, as the consciousness, are a million miles away. But then when you wake up, there you are again, right, in your original position. So, oh, okay, this is where I belong now. Let me go about, you know, doing. So we don't have to go anywhere. In one sense, we want to go back to God, but going literally means waking up, even in this world. Even in this body, we can experience these things. Iha yasya hare dasye karmana manasa gira nikalashupyavastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. Prabhupada quoted this verse quite often. So iha yasya means the activities. Hare dasye are all engaged in the service of Krishna. And how? Karmana manasa gira. That covers everything. The activities of the senses, of the mind, and the words. Nikala, all of them, Nikala Shupyavastasu, is situated in this consciousness, Jivan Mukta Sa Uchite. He is said to be a liberated soul, even in this Jiva form, in other words, in this being on this earth. And what is Mukta? What is Mukti? This we get from Bhagavatam, Mukti Hit Vanyata Rupam Swarupena Vastati. That real Mukti means to give up all these false forms, these other forms, Anyata Rupam. This is not really our form here, this is just covering, it's a charade. A costume. So give up that and be situated in our swarup, the one that doesn't change, the one that's been covered all this time. In other words, our real form of service. You know, in philosophy, you have this like, form and function. In which comes first? Form and function. They go together, right? This camera has a form because it wants to perform a function, take pictures, right? Therefore, the form has to be there. So we have a form just to match our function. Namely, our particular service for Krishna in the spiritual world. And that form may be a coward boy, coward girl, maybe a cow, whatever it may be. But we have our original desire to serve Krishna that will reveal to us progressively our eternal form. So that's what bhakti really means, and therefore, by this verse, if all of our activities of mind, body, and words are linked up to Krishna in loving service, then that form will be revealed to us. And we, even in this life, as long as the body keeps going, it has a certain schedule. And then when we leave it, we'll continue. We don't change. We continue with that service in the spiritual world. So this is what waking up from the dream is all about. But first we have to know that we are dreaming. And then we have to really want to wake up and then follow the process that's been given to us. Thank you very much. If there are any questions or comments on these points, Prabhu? Oh, wait, what about the mic? Is that this? Yep, speak into it for everybody's benefit.
Srila Prabhupada brought yesterday and the purport. And the birds yesterday.
Yes.
And Can you read it, because it is in Spanish, and can you read in English that that?
He's talking about the translation?
In the purport and the gesture at the verse number 54.
All right, I get verse number 54.
Yeah,
and which part of it do you want me to read now?
First, the purport.
Uh-huh.
Prophet say. Can you read it?
It's a long purport. I don't want to just read the whole purport.
No, only two lines.
All right, what does it say in English?
Ni el sueño profundo, you say? Ni in the dreams, deep dreams.
Oh, okay. Similarly, as one has subtle dreams at night?
No.
All right, point it out here. For me.
Okay. 54?
This is 54.
Okay. None in this condition, in the living entities?
Yes, and how far?
This is different. This one is different.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Who else had a question?
Oh, this is another
one? It's the same book. It's the same, exact same. There's no difference.
Okay, it's okay, you can read that.
All right, the first part of the purport, none of these conditions of the living entities, namely deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness, is substantial. They are simply displays of various phases of conditioned life.
Yeah, my question is, we have dreams in the spiritual world?
No, the spiritual world is this, the position of being awakened. The question was, do we have dreams in the spiritual world? So we're always awake in the spiritual world. Even you see, you know, if you read Govinda Lilamrita, you'll see that Krishna doesn't sleep. There's not much sleep going on there. You know, there's all his night pastimes, and he runs home right before dawn because he's with Radha. And so they run home, and then he lies down, and just after he lies down, closes his eyes, Mother Yashoda comes in, it's time to get up, you know. And he fakes it being asleep, she wakens up. Radharani does the same thing. Then it's time to do the day pastimes. You see? So there's no need for sleep. There may be a little hint at sleep because there's a rasa there of waking Krishna up, you know. But nobody is sleeping there. They're all simply awake in Krishna consciousness. Mother Yashoda is, you know, always in anxiety and this and that. So it's a different thing. The sleep is here. You know, the dreamless sleep, the waking, which is also kind of a dream, and what we call dreaming. Three states. But all of them are different stages of ignorance. There is no ignorance. It's pure, unlimited knowledge. So there's none of this sleeping and other thing. We're already there. You know, here we're trying to attain that state of perfection. It's existing there. When we wake up, we stay woken up. Yes, Prabhu. I'm sorry. Yeah. He was first. Go ahead, Prabhu, in the back.
The Buddha said that we are always dreaming within this world, that only when we go to the astral world, then we are in reality. Can we say right now we're serving the Lord in our dream? I mean, can we say that? Because everything we're doing is through the senses and sense perception, which in one sense is not really reality. So even here, because if we were to get divine vision right now, everything is completely different right here. So in one sense, can we say that we're serving the Lord in our dream here?
We are. Now, Prabhupada said we're serving. You know, yayatam abhidinte tam saiva bhajamyaham mama vartmana vartante manushak partasarvasha. Everyone follows my path in all regards, and I reciprocate accordingly. But in this world, we're really serving our misconceptions. In other words, we're serving Krishna's energy, right? I mean, we're serving the external energy. We're not serving the personality of Godhead. We're serving the energy of the Lord. Now, in one sense, that's still Krishna. So you can't not serve Krishna in that sense. But because we've lost touch of the personality of Godhead, therefore the reciprocation is, you know, really with the Maya Shakti, and the three gunas, and that produces suffering for us. In other words, the reciprocation is that we're punished. It's in one sense, that's also part of Krishna's love. It's just like a stern father has to punish the wayward child in order to bring him around. So if we're intelligent, we'll understand, yeah, I really can't enjoy in this world, right? This is my experience. I give so much service. This is the perfect verse. You want a verse for this? This is... originally by Madhavendrapuri. I learned that last year or so. But it's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada quotes this verse fairly frequently in his lectures. Kama dinam katina katita palita durnideshas. Tesham jata maina kaduna natrapano pashanti. Utsrid jayatan ata yodupate sampratam labdha buddhis. Tvamayata kshadanamabhayam mamnayung svatma dasye. So it's a prayer. So he says, forgive me, it's a little poem. Wouldn't be complete without a little poem. In how many ways have I sought to in how many ways have I sought to obey the seductive demands of my wicked desires? They've shown me no mercy, yet on I have gone shamelessly trying to quench lust's unquenchable fires. But now I'm rejecting these hellish desires, for my higher intelligence now has awoken. O Krishna, O shelter of fearlessness, please let me serve you with faith that will never be broken. So the point is, these desires which arise when we forget Krishna, right? That's as soon as we forget Krishna. What is that? Krishna bohomukha boga vanchakori nikalastha maya tape japatiya dhari. Thank you. As soon as we turn the face away from Krishna, maya is right there, and with a desire to enjoy, maya is right there to tackle us, just like you tackle on a football field. You know, pull us down and cover. Those two things, the covering and the pulling down. So what does that mean? Yes, we're still serving Krishna, but in this external form, we're doing it in ignorance. So this prayer is that, how many births, how many ways have I sought to obey these demands of my material desires? I've served them so faithfully, but have they shown me mercy? Have I gotten love like if you serve Krishna? No. They've been cruel taskmasters, just like slave drivers. And they show me no mercy, yet shamelessly I'm still trying to serve them. But now, and this is the key, because what do we have that the animals don't have? The intelligence. Now my higher intelligence has awoken, and I'm rejecting these desires. But that's not enough. That's the Mayavadis. If you only get to the first three lines, you're in Mayavad. I know that my attachment for this world and its enjoyments is bringing me suffering. Therefore, let me repress the senses. Let me always remember that I'm spirit, aham, brahmasmi, Tattvamasi, you're also spirit, and this way I won't remain entangled, and I'll be free. I'll be free of all suffering of birth and death. But it's false, because they're not, the impure intelligence has rejected the service of the Lord, the personal form. And therefore, that kind of liberation is temporary. We discussed it. Aruha kuchena padang padang tata patam tyadho anadrita yishmarangriya. Because of aversion to the personality of God and service. Therefore, even though with great effort, you can imagine the effort. Just imagine if we had no deity, had no holy name, had no prasadam, had no association. All you have is your understanding that I can't be attached. I can't be attached. You know, I have to go off to a cave, you know, sensory deprivation, right? Restrain the senses. That's called quick trainer. That's called very austere. You know, austerities. And some few, one or two, can rise up to Brahman. But because it's artificial, they again fall down. Let me at least have, you know, let me at least be known as a great philanthropist. Let me do some service, you know, for the people in general, you know. That's the point Prabhupada makes. So he immediately, in this verse of Madhavendrapuri, prays for the service of the Lord. Now I'm running to your lotus feet, Lord. Please engage me in your service. Because without the platform of service to Krishna, getting the higher taste, you can never remain detached. Even though you know it's bad for you. Just like a dieter, right? Someone loses weight and great effort, you know, and then a little temptation comes, you're in the ice cream shop, oh, you know, you're down, back again. You're fatter than before. It's the same thing. You're dieting, you know, vishaya vinivartante nidaharasideh. It literally means not eating. Nidaharasidehinak. The living entity should not consume the object of the senses. In one sense, all of our senses consume the objects. You hear the cinema songs, you know, probably the cinema songs. You see the beauty of the opposite sex, whatever, you know, taste. All of them are consuming. So now, don't consume. But if you don't, but the taste remains, you know, deeply embedded, and with a little stimulation, it comes again. But param drishtva nivartate. If you see the supreme, namely Krishna, then you remain fixed. So one verse. I don't want to leave this point of the intelligence. Remember the last verse of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Evam buddhe puram buddhva stungstapyatmanama atmana jahishatam mahabahu kamarupam durasadam. That knowing with the intelligence that you are beyond the intelligence, Therefore, in other words, cultivating your spiritual intelligence, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. It's karma which is our enemy, which is our attachment for the things of this world. That karma was originally prema. Prabhupada explains in the purport in that section. But it's become adulterated and contaminated by contact with the modes of nature. So we got to use our intelligence. And with that strong spiritual intelligence, by hearing, chanting, associating, serving, we can follow this verse. Reject the lower desires and run to Krishna for service. Ganga Narayan Prabhu, please bring the mic. Who's got the mic? Where's the mic? Okay. We need a runner. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krowenthal essay.
I just happened to be reading the seventh canto of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
In the chapter preceding the golden flood, it explains about the golden giant and guy. And in those purports, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that giant and guy came from the material world under yoga maya.
Yeah. Formerly, we were within Krishna. Yeah.
Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur says this in the Jiva Dharma that in that chapter on Jiva Tattva, where it's explaining that the Jiva comes from the Tatva region, and it uses the example of the two different shores,
uh-huh.
You know, like the line in between the water and the sand.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know all those things, and for me, you know, there are so many other statements in Srila Prabhupada. We can discuss this ad nauseum, but this statement for me, it's just simple. You know, once we were with Krishna is Leela and sport, and I think it was formerly with Krishna, and he's not referring there. You know, I don't think anyone can think he's referring there to the Leela of creation. He's referring to what we commonly know as sport. I'm not going to get into it because we have another question on this side. Okay, yeah. Did someone else have anything, or is it getting too late? Okay, one more. Madan Mohan? I'm sorry we didn't get to the ladies. Please forgive me. Okay, Madan.
That, as you're pointing out, that this is kind of like an insignificant point, the tal and the...
Krowenthal.
Tal, yeah, the fruit there. What I've noticed is that this is actually being used as one of the main faith breakers in Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
From other groups by having a conflict on this point, that once they hear sufficiently from how we may have come from the Tathashta region or the Brahmajyoti, that their faith, they cannot hear properly again Prabhupada. Every time they hear it, there's a voice in the mind comes back and says, no, that's not right. So even though it may seem insignificant, I've seen it affect people's faith very significantly in ISKCON and Prabhupada.
Prabhupada wanted us to my understanding why he wrote this, he really, this is an essay, you know, that he wrote this, is to, all right, accept it, this, and then go on and don't make a big thing about it. But you're right, it has become a flag issue over the years, although I haven't been so aware of it lately, maybe because I haven't been in the circles you've been in. But, you know, so much has been written about this. I can, if anyone wants, you know, that section of my hard drive where I have all the quotes, Judah Karma's book, where he quotes from so many parts of Srila Prabhupada's books. Fourth canto, there's a purport where he directly talks about it. You know.
There's always argument and rebuttal.
Yeah.
But that's subservient to faith. In other words, you know, nothing's ever settled by argument.
Yeah, for me, you know, Prabhupada's position on this was clear. What others may have said about it, you know, other acharyas, but I'm perfectly settled in my mind that this is what Prabhupada believed and this is what he taught. But not that he was doing some preaching strategy or something. This is what he believed, this is what he's taught, and therefore that's what it's going to be for me.
So for those devotees, you know, like they have that one about if you listen to Shankaracharya's...
Yes.
He says, even if you're a Mahabhagavat, if you listen to this, then your faith is going to change. So, not that I'm making a direct analogy, but I've noticed practically no one has the same faith in Prabhupada that they did once they understand and once they hear these other points.
Okay. We're going to end it on that. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari, hari.